in Cowboys news. Now.
Sports Radio 1300.
Now, boys, about an hour ago, we heard that DeMarcus Lawrence had suffered a foot injury at practice today, was limited. We're now hearing, we first saw from Joe Trahan, now seeing the NFL on Fox reporting this on their Twitter site. Per multiple sources, DeMarcus Lawrence suffered a broken foot and is out indefinitely.
Jeez.
We called it. We said it. Broken foot.
Man.
You know what the only thing that can make us feel better right now?
What is that, Danny?
The Joel Klatt theme song.
Hell yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Biatch.
Shake your ass.
Joel Klatt.
That could be 4 to 6 weeks or Joel Klatt. Could be the whole darn year, Corby.
Well, let's talk to Joel about it. Brought to you
Joel
by...
Klatt.
Corby and Bob. Okay, Joel Klatt, from our friends over at Fox Sports. We've been waylaid by Cowboy News, but how are you?
I know. I mean, like, I'm sorry. This feels like an awkward time to walk in, you know? It's like, did you guys ever, like, when you were a kid, like, you go over to a friend's house and everyone's, like, moping around and you're just like, you ask your buddy, you're like, what's wrong with everybody here? And
yeah.
He's like, oh, we had to put our dog down today. And you're like, geez, you know, or like, oh, grandma died today. And you're like, well, why am I here? What do I,
right.
So that's kind of how I feel right now. I'm walking into the DeMarcus Lawrence news.
You're holding your little basketball, wanting to go play horse, and we just drop a bomb on you.
You're here to help us heal.
Geez. Okay. Well, I can try to do that.
So you worked a very fun game on Saturday.
I did.
Not the least of which the highlights were many. I mean, you had the dude face planting, running out the band guy. I don't even know what they called
him. I didn't realize that until after the game. I hadn't even seen that. I would have called for that during the broadcast. In the face.
It's such an omen.
They haven't had fans there or band there in 650 days. Everyone's juiced up for it. Everyone's like, and the dude... absolutely face plant.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to like get rid of those ridiculous band shoes and like, I don't know, like put on some black tennies.
See?
He's like running down there in these like clodhopper boots and just bam.
Yeah. And we're talking about the Ohio State Oregon game for everyone not paying attention. And Joel worked that game and it was a wonderful college football spectacle. So you had that. And then you had an Oregon team winning despite one of the funnier moments I've ever seen, and you guys were all over this, with basically Oregon defensive back reading his wristband to figure out what the coverage was as Ohio State wide receiver runs by him for a touchdown. High comedy.
That was crazy. So all week I'm watching my film. I've actually got film on right in front of me right now. I'm watching OU. But last week I'm watching film. And I'm like, man, Oregon just doesn't get lined up several times against Fresno State. Just doesn't get lined up. And I know, like, Tim DeRuiter is in there at defensive coordinator, and they're doing some things that are a little bit new, obviously. And I'm just like, you know, Ryan Day always exploits tempo once he crosses the 50. It's just like, count it. It's like Urban Meyer running his quarterback on 3rd and 1. It's just like, it's going to happen. It's like slow. Slow, quick, slow, right? I mean, it's like the same old thing. And so I said, I was like, you know, he's going to use tempo. And sure enough, they're staring at their wristbands. So I was watching for it. And thankfully, I caught it real time and was able to kind of give that replay. But, man, I was so impressed, by the way, with Oregon at the line of scrimmage, the way that they've recruited on the outside in order to make tackles in the open field. And then their coaching staff thoroughly outcoached the Ohio State staff. I think even to Ryan's, you know, own admission, he would have to say that. They got absolutely outcoached. And the defensive effort and execution from Ohio State was awful.
Mm. It really was.
It was bad. And, you know, you kind of expected that out of Oregon with all the dudes that they were missing. And... it just goes to show, you know, we've talked about this with you a couple of times, and Bob and I were talking about it yesterday. I love this game. I absolutely loved it because I'm ready for the others to step up, to rise up, and for all the people that just, the simpletons that think football, good college football, is basically confined into one conference and a couple other teams here and there. No, there is, the West Coast can still play football, and that Oregon bunch proved it the other day. That's a hell of a football team.
It really is. I don't know what they're going to do the rest of the year, because obviously they've got Justin Flo out now. They've got Drew Mathis, the linebacker, out. They need to get Thibodeau back on the field. But they're veteran on that offensive side, and I think that they're going to make life difficult on a lot of people. But I will tell you this. There is no Pac-12 team, I don't care how bad, that's going to let them run around the left side of the offensive line untouched for three touchdowns during the game. I still can't even. Ryan Day has got to be like beside himself. And I know he's talked about making some changes, whether that's personnel or staff or a combination of both. Probably needs to be a combination of both. They literally were pulling guards out who had no one to block.
Yeah.
I'm like, it wasn't even like a reverse. It's like, what is happening right now? At some point you have to think to yourself, you know, our guys just might not be good man players. Maybe we should stop running man coverage. A little zone might help here when guys are running butt naked down the sideline.
Yeah.
Stark naked in front of 100,000 people and 7 million on Fox. Look at him, butt naked down the sideline. No one touching him.
Boy, congrats on that number, too. That was a big old number. A lot of eyeballs on that game.
Do you like how I just threw that in?
No,
there?
It was nice.
It was like a big compliment to ourselves, right. In my analysis there. Just threw it in.
It was, you know, either how to work
a little grenade into the middle of the interview.
It was either a humble brag or just a brag, and I think
full on brag.
Okay, that's good.
Not even a humble. Humble brag would have been something along these lines. Gosh, guys, I'm just so humbled that so many people watched us last week.
Perfect.
Who knew?
This guy knows.
All right,
it's Joe Klatt here every Wednesday on The Ticket. And, this is a rather general statement about specific games we've been talking about. But, man, it's tough for young quarterbacks to fully comprehend the hostile environment. And that Texas-Arkansas game was a great example of, you know, just a super talented and probably pretty prepared kid gets in a loud stadium where things start to move really fast and you think you see something, but it's a blur, and then you get hit. And, man, it's tough. That's the ultimate test, I guess, is the hostile environment test for a very young quarterback.
It is. The only thing that you can't replicate and you just don't know is what is going to go on. There's two big moments for a quarterback in their career. And the first is the first time you take a snap in a college game. It's just big. It's fast. It's unlike anything that you've ever experienced before. The next biggest moment for a quarterback is the first snap he takes on the road in an actual real road environment. Those are just different animals. I remember vividly the first game I ever played on the road. It was at Kansas State. I thought that I had played in a big environment. We played a neutral site game against Colorado State. It was ranked. There were 76,000 in Mile High. I thought I knew what noise was. Then we played, we played CSU at home. We played UCLA at home. We played Washington State at home. I hadn't started on the road. And then all of a sudden we go to Kansas State, and they had all these motorcycles around the field, you know, they're like revving them up and everything, and they're doing the Wabash Cannonball right in my ear. Guy in purple, you know, face paint screaming at me, telling me that I'm old and I've got a bald spot, which kind of got in my head. I thought it was a great play on his part. But it was just different. The elevated heart rate, the elevated anxiety, every ball that I threw was high. I set the formation wrong three times during the game and didn't even realize it until I got over to the sideline. Things just happen really fast, and I think those are the things that maybe Hudson was learning in the game. But I also, Bob, I think it would be borderline irresponsible of us to look at that game and think to ourselves, well, it was just Hudson Card.
Right, right.
Because
totally.
The defense got crushed and just ultimately just run over. And to there's an aspect of that game that was really frustrating for me to watch, very similar to the Ohio State game, and that was the sheer, oh gosh, what do I want to give a disclaimer here? Let me just tell you something you can't do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Follow me here. First quarter, it's about 6 minutes and 40 seconds left. Third and six. Arkansas gets into an empty formation, totally empty. Texas wants to run cover one man, okay, one safety in the back of the middle of the field. Everybody else is in man-to-man defense. But the problem is that they put all five of the defensive box players up into the line of scrimmage. So now there's no second-level player. And you're in man, okay, but no second-level player. If you're going to do that, I'm just telling you right now, you have to stunt your defensive line. You have to run a game, twist, do something to take away the quarterback rush lanes. If you just rush up the field, then they've got what's called hats for hats. They have run ratios. You can just run the quarterback. That's why a quarterback draw is so good right there. They basically run a quarterback draw and he gains 18 yards for a first down. And I was thinking to myself, how in God's name is that your first third down or one of your first third down calls in the game? It's the first quarter without a checkout into an automatic stunt or get out of cover one man coverage. Like, I saw some things, and then you see the same type of issue happening in the Ohio State game. And I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, what are these guys doing on Tuesday and Wednesday night? That drove me nuts when I was watching the film of that game.
Are you, back to the card Casey Thompson conundrum that we have now? Are you surprised that he pulled the plug so quickly on Card? I mean, I don't think that he expected that kid to go 11-0.
You're going to play though, right?
Yeah, but still, it's almost like, all right, next. That was bad. Next. Like, I don't know. I just think, I mean, he just went to him 2 weeks ago as the starter, and now he's like, all right, we're done.
I do think that there's a little bit of an element of keeping Casey engaged and Hudson engaged, because if you lose one of them and just say, listen, you're benched, it's this guy's job until he fails.
Transfer.
I think that you're going to lose one of them to a transfer. And I think the last thing you need is for Casey to transfer, because you know you got no depth and a really young quarterback. So because the urgency for Casey to get on the field is ticking, tick, 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 tick. His career is coming to an end, right? So he needs to get on the field. I don't know if that's absolutely the case. There could be some things that you just need to sit a guy down and say, listen, we want to work through these together. Heck, Spencer Rattler was benched last year during a game in Red River.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so what's more embarrassing? Is it to get this and be like, hey, we're going to start out right here. We're going to both plan for the game. You're both going to play. Or is it to just absolutely get the yank in the middle of the Red River game?
What do you think of what went down in Aggieland up there at Mile High? Your Buffaloes put up a massive, massive fight, and in the end it just kind of became too much from an athlete standpoint. But A&M lost a big one there early.
Well, I mean, Haynes King, they're going to need to do something, because it just didn't feel like Zach Calzada had what it take. What was he like? I think he was like 18 of 38 for 183. Guys, I think Colorado's better than most think. This is not Colorado 5 years ago or 6 years ago, you know. They're pretty salty on defense against the run. They can run it. Carl Durrell, their head coach, has done a really nice job there. Now, they don't have the top-line talent at the skill positions to win the game, although it was close. I just think that A&M offensively has got to figure this out. Remember now, we've seen them struggle in the first half in the opener against Kent State. They led only 10-3. Then they struggled the entire game against Colorado. And granted, your quarterback goes down and you got to figure it out, and I understand that. Thankfully for them, their defense is really good and very salty and probably going to get better. What's the tackle's name coming back? McKinley, what's his name?
Well, DeMarvin Leal is the big the
well, yeah, oh, you mean the one coming back from injury?
That wasn't
playing.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He hasn't played in the first 2 weeks. I'm blanking his name right now, so forgive me. But that should help their defense, in particular, even more in the run game, which I think that they've done, really well. So I think A&M will be fine, but there's some questions now.
Yeah.
The injury and the lack of success on offense presents some questions. They're definitely not, you know, ready to compete at the top end of the SEC West.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, not specifically about Zach Calzada, because, yes, he went in there and he looked like he wasn't anticipating he would have to play on Saturday. And by the fourth quarter, we started to see some decent work from him, including that game-winning touchdown and even the – the fumble on the goal line was – he was doing some decent things. I guess what I wanted to ask you, though, was the more general point of two guys are in a quarterback competition. One guy doesn't get the job, and if they're pretty young and if they've always been the man, I wonder what that initial preparation is like to get him ready, that he's one play away when they're just kids and Call of Duty or whatever is also really fun. You know, I just wonder about that.
It's impossible for a young backup quarterback that's never been a starter to even comprehend the level of preparation that goes into preparing for a football game.
100%.
It's impossible, to your point.
Yeah.
And so what we saw on Saturday was entirely predictable.
It really was.
Point, if he was forced into a game in a meaningful situation, it was going to be absolute deer in the headlights, because there is no earthly way that he has any concept of what it means to even be out there, nor what it means to prepare all week with the anxiety, stress, and pressure of knowing you will be the guy out there. Trust me, guys, I'm telling you, like, I lived in a constant state of anxiousness and stress and urgency. It was Wednesday night at 10:45 at night, and I was urgently watching the third downs against the Trey formation, right? So we had, like, Trey, and we had this package of plays, and it's like, what do they do against Trey, which is our 3-by-1? How does that change when we cross the 50? How does that change in third down? What about third and obvious? Taking copious amounts of notes. Do you know why? Because the first game when I went out there, I realized that, like, the volume of information that you have to process as a quarterback is more abundant than you can possibly fathom.
Yeah.
You have to be basically a computer on the field, and you have to know these things, and you can only succeed if you study your butt off. Mm. And these guys that have never been out there and are young, in particular, that lose battles, that hoped to be out there, have no concept. It's part of my disdain for backups. You know how everyone loves a backup quarterback?
You hate it.
Well, not this guy.
And the starter
not
goes down.
Guy. You know why? You just walk out of the building on Tuesday night and Wednesday night and Thursday night. What are you doing for dinner? Oh, I don't know. Are you going to the party tonight? No, I'm not going to the party. I'm filled with panic.
Yeah.
Well, the starter goes down with 11:45 left of the first quarter, so there's no place to hide for the next 3 hours, too. It was something.
Dude, you got a big one.
One of the first times I ever went on the field at Colorado, I was a true freshman. I was older at the time, so I should have known better, but I was older. I was all amped up and everything like that, and we call a couple of pass plays, and it's incomplete. I overthrew a guy and everything, and I come off, and I'm expecting Gary Barnett to be warm and fuzzy with me. In my first college action, I'm a walk-on. I've played minor league baseball for the last 3 years, for goodness sakes. And he comes off, and with a stern look, he just looks at me, and he's like, good thing we're not wearing white pants. I was like, geez, thanks a lot, guy.
All right, you got a big one coming up here. You have the renewal of the rivalry of OU-Nebraska, which is my favorite game when I was growing up as a kid. It meant more to me than damn near anything, and you get it coming back, and I saw you on Twitter post that you consider it about the coolest thing that doesn't exist anymore in college football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was basically, you know, I grew up in the Big 8 footprint, and so it was kind of the game of the year in the Big 8 before Colorado became really good in the early 90s and the middle 90s, and kind of took over when OU fell off for the game that decided the Big 8 and ultimately the participant in the Orange Bowl. It was, I mean, these two programs, I think with what happened and has happened with Nebraska, we just fail to remember the magnitude of these two programs. These two programs, along with Michigan, were college football in Alabama. You know, I mean, they were the four blue bloods, maybe with USC in there and maybe some Ohio State. But, like, oh, I mean, this was the game. This was Thanksgiving. This is what put college football on the map. And in a big sense, not necessarily the 71 game, but this rivalry, the Thanksgiving Day affair between Nebraska and OU is what led to the current state of television in college football, because this elevated those two programs to the point where in the 80s, Oklahoma felt like they had the brand big enough to sue the NCAA and say, we want to go sell our own rights. And they won. And that's where we stand now. And the reason we have football all day long is because the Oklahoma Sooners and their brand was big enough, built on the back of games like this, to go and win the right to go sell the media rights for them and their conference partners.
We'll be watching. Thank you for your time, Mr. Klatt. It's always a pleasure, sir.
11 a.m.
That's right. And don't say that disparagingly, or else I'm going to think of you as a backup quarterback.
Do not.
Do not.
I spent many a day out there on the backup side.
So, we will prepare. Yeah. All right. See you, Joel.
I hate backups.
There he goes.
See you, buddy.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.